Okay. So welcome back to the M&A Zing, the weekly podcast for acquisition entrepreneurs, search funders and holdco builders across the UK, Europe and beyond. We are right now recording live at the Serial Acquirer Symposium, and I'm honoured to be joined by Ibrahim Abdulrahim, the managing partner at Moonbase Capital, operating out of Barcelona and increasingly one of the most supportive and progressive search investors in Europe. Before founding Moonbase Capital, Ibrahim built and led Derla Europe, Egypt, where he managed the largest manufacturer of food ingredients in the Middle East and Africa. And prior to that, he was consultant at McKinsey Milan, subsequently leading the setting up of McKinsey Egyptian arm in Cairo. Ibrahim holds two Masters of Business from INSEAD and Stanford. Welcome, Ibrahim.
Thank you, Gareth. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
So I'd like to get started, if we can, given how prolific Moonbase is becoming as a backer of searchers and as a supporter of the space, getting into the sort of what specifically attracted you to this? Well, you had all the options in the world after your last opportunity. Why did you choose search?
I went to Silicon Valley and Stanford in order to go into VCs and technology and all that. And then I had the course in Stanford about search funds, and, you know, Stanford are very big on search funds. I just fell in love. And because my whole life was an SME, my family business is an SME, and then we sold to the Germans. So this idea of taking a small business and growing it is very close to my heart.
So
and
you lived the experience.
Yeah, I lived the experience. So for me, this was like the moment I heard about it was like, I'm doing this. In the beginning was, should I do it as a searcher or as a...
as a capital analyst.
So I thought about that. And then the concept was, I already been a CEO for a while. I don't want to do this anymore. I prefer to help others to do this role. So
I see. Okay. So you've so far backed how many searchers?
45, I'd say.
Incredible. Yeah. In how long a space of time?
4 years. Well, it's not so long. I mean, it's...
In this space, we're moving at the pace that it is. That's incredible. Yeah. And so what have you... What's made a good searcher, in your opinion, when you're looking for, you know, the kind of opportunities to back? Because you're not short of opportunities, I would imagine.
That's actually a very hard question, huh? Because we split our searchers into two groups. So we have the operators, who are usually very good at running the company, but then when it comes to search, it's not their thing. However, you have the other group, which is the consultants / private equity guys who are really good at the search. They're self-motivated. They're sophisticated.
They'll never operate.
But when it comes to operations, it becomes hard. And usually these are the two categories we try to put people inside. And really, we work with both. So we look for some things across both, like grit is very important. Like, is this person, can you trust them to deal with? I mean, trust is one thing, but the other thing is, would you, because that's a 10-year journey, would you be happy to work with them over the next 10 years? Do they take feedback? Are they excited to do this, or are they just doing it because there's no other option? So there are all these things. But I would like to say something, which is like, we do all these efforts and we think there is a formula, but really there isn't. So if you look at the people I've backed up, and I thought, some of them I thought these are the stars, but then it's not necessarily the ones who get the best companies, and the opposite is true. So really, we make such a big thing of who are the right searchers. And of course, there's a line. Yeah. But I think above that, there's a lot of luck involved.
Sure. I mean, and look, VC has spent like hundreds of millions trying to perfect like this kind of systematic way of assessing founders of early stage businesses. I think it's equally hard to assess and screen entrepreneurs in the acquisition space. I think, you know, there's an element of trusting your gut. There's an element of looking at the provenance of where they come from. You can kind of understand why some of these accelerator programs like to take people that are proven operators and career changers, because that's where the value creation comes from. But similarly, a suitably motivated and competent private equity person who has been flying spreadsheets and doing analytical stuff actually could bring a lot of insightful kind of change to those businesses to create that value too.
100%.
It's hard to screen for, right? So, have you invested largely on the quality of the proposition or the quality of the company or how well you've personally resonated with the search?
I think it's a mix of both, of the three things. So for sure, we try to be as close as possible to the searchers. So after 2 years of working together, we know them quite well. So when the company is when they find the company, we can really decide if this searcher fits this company or not. So for sure, the searcher is an important part. Company, of course, is the major thing for us, because if you have something like a big EBITDA, the margin is big and it's growing fast already, you know, okay, you have something that is probably a good one. And then you have the typical search funds criteria, which we care about. So we're, no company has all of them, but in general, the, I would say the company for us is more of the company and the sector, of course. The sector is very important because if the company is more important, but if the sector is growing, you know that at exit at least.
You know, a company in a growing sector is still going to make a decent return.
At least, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
So have you, are you agnostic about the types of searcher that you invest in? Are you doing equity cap deals in self-funded as well as traditional?
So we have done equity caps in, or we're open to do equity caps. However, self-funded for us was a bit hard because, which was mentioned today in the event, which is very true. For us, the traditional search fund entrepreneur, when they find a deal, it's very easy. You know the structure, you know everything, and you just go through it. Self-funded is a lot of work. You need to know who else is investing. There's always percentages. There's a negotiation with the searcher on how much they would take. So there's a lot of that. So it does take way more work. And in the ones that at least I saw were much smaller amount.
The self-funded seems to kind of gravitate towards the smaller deals. More equity in smaller deals because raising the capital can be more difficult for those kind of operations.
That said, we want to enter more into self-funded and even single sponsor. Like the fact that these models are all growing and it's for us exciting. So
we also represent some portfolio diversification, right?
You're 100%.
Not entirely dependent on traditional. Then if it opens up, you know, a wider set of metrics and opportunities to balance the portfolio, construct the portfolio.
100%. Of course, it comes with challenges. Like you need to be more of an operations, you need to be an M&A machine, basically, which is not the typical private equity role or the M&A role. It's more of you'll get, especially with self-funded, you'll have every week deals coming in. So you need to be really, you know, more of a production line of deals.
And yet still not commodify them or tar them all with the same brush. You need to treat them all, you know,
100%.
That same kind of fresh pair of eyes every time.
So this would be the challenge, I think. Yeah. This would be the challenge.
I think it is. And I wonder if AI is going to kind of commodify some of that to some extent. Let it do the first screen and tell me if it's meeting any of the kind of metrics that I'm looking for.
We're doing that now with searchers, actually. So when we get the PPM, we have a bot that gives us an opinion. Of course, we still do the calls and everything, but we're trying to use it.
That's interesting. And what is it looking for?
It's looking for like a set of criteria having to do with the MBA, which MBA or no MBA, the job, like the progression jobs, did they lead people or not?
Yeah.
So it's usually takes the CV, it takes the PPM, but focuses a lot on the CV itself, last page, yeah. and comes up with a scoring that honestly usually it's not working well, so it's we still need a human. Yeah, we still need a human to make sure, but yeah, it's a first, it's a good start, let's say. To
I think augmenting the humans with the machines to help us kind of do the heavy lifting is only good, particularly as the volume of this kind of inbound is inevitably going to grow. I think, yeah, having some help there is critical,
and this I think will be a challenge for funds, because the work that was needed to be done as a private equity or a venture capital will be very different than funds who will deal with hundreds of self-funded, hundreds of traditional. I mean, like, you need to be a very different beast. Yeah. And I think this will be a challenge on how funds will scale over time.
Is there, are you a multi kind of fund approach at Moonbase? Is this like fund one has done 45 deals and might, maybe 60% of those might become transactions, and then capital going into those, then we're going to kind of cut it and go fund two? Or are you perpetual for evergreen?
No, we're actually more than anyone in that regard. So the first fund was 15 million euros, and we like the size because we work with around 30-35 searchers in the funds. So we thought that's a good amount to give them the service we think we need to give them. And then now we're doing fund two, which is again 15 million. So we're trying to do that.
So it was 35.
So 35 in one, and now maybe like 10, 15 in the other. So we're growing it.
Yeah, nice. So have there been any returns to fund one so far? Or is it still too early? Just like 4 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the first searcher was Q1 2021. First company was 23. So no, not yet. I think they're doing okay. They're doing well. It's very hard also in the first year to judge.
And things like that, you know, multiple investor capital is a kind of creative instrument, and a little bit approximate because it's only real when it's real.
Exactly. So it's very hard to
fall by it.
Hard to judge it, especially SMEs, because the EBITDA is so small. if the searcher comes in and hires one person and does one small mistake, already a bit of dips. So it's very hard to decide in year one, year two, if this is going to be a winner or not.
Of the mind that they always have a J curve. They expect them, you acquire them, there's going to be change. You know, it's not going to continue up until the right. If it does, great, but it's not guaranteed, is it?
Always, honestly.
The opposite is true, actually, typically. And so do you have a fixed kind of like eye on an exit window for your the companies that you back? Are you sort of saying to the entrepreneurs, look, be mindful this is a 5-year and at that point we want recapping, or we want you to pursue an exit? Because it's quite hard for these folks to find an exit opportunity in order to deliver distribution loss. Deliver dividends or advocate your distributions to your LPs?
No, I mean, first thing, they have to pay the debt. So, of course,
after your debt,
that's number one. If there is after that no M&A and there is extra cash, then I guess dividends would be next. We don't push for an exit because already their return has to do, their personal return is linked to the IRR. So they don't have the incentive to stay. No, and they, if they stay too long, the IRR will probably... So for us, our rule is we don't want to push them to sell early because I think that's wrong. And we tell our LPs that the portfolio might have one or two companies that will stay longer than 7-10 years. So be patient. So we try to be patient as much as possible because we think there is a lot of value that you can destroy if you push these guys to sell prematurely.
Yeah, of course. So of the 35 in Fund 1, how many have actually gone and found a deal and you've had to participate in the acquisition?
So far, 20 have, let's say, finished. We've participated with half of them. In general, we do, our average has been 50% of the deals. Some don't find. So actually, only two didn't find. So for us,
that's right. So you pick well.
Yeah,
that you had the optionality on which ones you wanted to back at the kind of acquisition capital stage.
Exactly. So far, we've done around 10 deals from 20 companies.
So why did those 50% make it and the other 50% didn't? In terms of like when you had to pick out of 20 to do 10, it's not going to just be the first 10 through the door, is it?
No.
How did you rule out certain ones? Was it just not a sector you wanted to be in? Or?
The other challenge in investing in search funds is it's so diverse. I mean, there is so many different reasons and so many different sectors. And so each one has a different reason. So one, for example, if it's high in working capital requirement, we don't like that too much because we'd rather spend the debt.
So asset light.
Asset light for us is not a red flag, but a yellow flag. It needs to be. Number two, so one of them was in a sector that we were not sure it will grow. It was plastic related, etc. And we didn't want that.
Yeah, the ESG kind of angle to that too.
Yeah. I'm
sure plastic's going to get the persona non grata at some point.
I don't know. You're
so addicted to it.
And the thing is, you buy now and the company will exit in 5 years. So you want to know that someone in 5 years...
is going to want to buy it.
Yeah, so it's like harder to... So this was another reason. Another one was because the discussions with the searcher made us worry because there were certain things we gave feedback and he was like, I want to close. He wants to close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's also where I think the model breaks a bit because there is a point when the searcher wants to close and... he doesn't really care too much about the future. He wants to close. And this is here where you need to make sure that you look at the right things and ask the right questions.
Sure, short-termism isn't... you don't really want to be wedded to that. Someone with a longer kind of strategy would be beneficial there, I think. But yeah, input, I guess tenacity and a bias for action is good, but impetuousness is not. So
the other thing is you're really aligned during the first 2 years. But once there is a company, they want to close. And you as an investor... want to close, but also you're not in the same situation. Yeah. So here's where it's a bit, and it's dangerous because also they deal with the due diligence, they do the negotiations. So in some cases, you worry because
you get a right to review.
Of course, yeah. You review, but you need to do it with a lot of street smartness because you know that you're one layer backed up from
the action. A memo. Rather than
memo, you talk to the searcher. Yeah, you talk to the searcher. But at the end of the day, you don't do the negotiation yourself. So there might be something there that was said that you don't know about. There might be. So that's makes it a bit harder to close.
Yeah. Okay. So you have to have real trust in the searcher. To points that were made earlier about good searchers communicating with their investors and being transparent and open book. I think that's those are great qualities. Certainly things that I imagine you guys are looking for. Good. Okay, so let's go step out from the deals and look more at the space. You're talking shortly with the keynote that you're giving at the end of the conference today about the future of ETA in Europe, which is great. We're looking forward to that. Moonbase have become, you know, a face of ETA in Europe, and by which I mean not your face, Mr. Pizzeri, but I mean the brand, the amount of knowledge that you guys give, the amount of collateral and material that you're fritting out to raise the awareness and to improve kind of like standards, if you will, in the space. It's just phenomenal. So first and foremost,
thank you
for what you do for the space. But was that a conscious effort? Why have you chosen to do that?
It's actually interesting because the reason was it came from more fear rather than... So when we started, the idea was we have something to offer which is we care a lot about it. We want to give a certain service to the searchers, and we thought we need this voice to come out. What we didn't realize at the moment is that nobody else used to do that. This 5 years ago, it was very rare. So we started...
to business schools, no one was really kind of proliferating information. Investors didn't take on that kind of obligation, if you will.
So we started doing it in order to get known, but also because we thought that searchers need the info. And then it has really a life on its own. So there's a team, there are people who do it. You know what I mean? Like now, honestly, it's becoming a bit too much, some people say. So maybe you need to put it back a bit, but it's a lot of work. And what I want to do next is try to pick more the brains of other investors. There's so many investors in this space who are so knowledgeable, way more than I am, and we do it on our own. But next step for us would really be try to
collaborate
more with investors who would add to that.
Done the heavy lifting because you've created the platform. You know, you've created this kind of awareness. You've got sort of regular cadence of content coming out. So
many people don't like that, by the way. Some investors, because some people don't want the space to grow too fast, and they feel that new investors and new ideas are not so welcome. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, when you do something with a lot of love, and then some people are like, we don't love this too much. And so I'm in a space where I'm reconsidering whether I should push more with that, whether I should change it a bit. But it's not as some people don't like the hype around this world.
It's been interesting seeing some of that resistance. Whereby almost there's been a bit of parochialism. This has been our space, and it's been quite okay being at this size. And, we do this number of deals, and we allocate this amount of capital, and we can happily have it sit at this subsisting level, which, I mean, it's to be respected. But with all this abundant opportunity of, you know, the generational wealth transfer and all of these SMBs, which have a compelling reason to sell, if we don't industrialize it a bit more, if we don't encourage more searchers to come in and pick up the mantle, well, we're failing the space, sure, mate.
I agree 100%. The problem is some people view the IRR, average IRR, as a very important metric. And of course, the more you grow, average IRR will go down a bit. You as an investor should make sure that your IRR is safe. But so people worry about that.
But is there an inevitability to that?
I don't know. I think, I mean, eventually, when this thing grows, I really believe we will have in 10, 15 years, 1,000 searchers a year coming into the space. It's not like the 50 we have now.
If that's spread around enough across Europe, for example, or across the globe, that's not saturation.
No, saturation not at all. But maybe these searchers will have to start doing, maybe there will be some searchers who will do turnarounds. Maybe there are other searchers who will buy, Like it not be anymore.
You might subcategorize it.
They must. And of course, some of the thousands will not be that good searchers. So naturally, now it's a bit of the cherry, you're just picking the best. Of course, this will change. However, you will have a sector, because what you have now is you have a niche of a niche. It's like, and it's nothing, it's really small. So it's, I'm very much pro growing it, and I'm very excited by that. And not everyone is on that boat.
Yeah, protecting the metrics, like not wanting to see a increasing quantity translating to a reduced percentage of deal completions or successful searches or whatever. Like I understand that, but I think it's a necessary part. What it does is it creates the obligation on the kind of capital allocators to go raise more money and bring more money to the table and for more people to enter the space and. That will naturally kind of catalyze more deals to be done, and providing we're all still diligent about the deals that get done and we're not also overpaying for city multiples for the companies, then it should be okay. I mean, I don't think we're at risk of saturation anytime soon.
And the other thing is, you as an investor will choose your deals and your searchers. So your IRR will be your IRR. And if you're a good investor, you'll get the best deals anyway. So there's no competition in our world. And that's also, I mean, in general, the relationship between the investors is really good. Yes. So there is no...
Relationship is excellent.
That's excellent. So that's something which we're still holding. But I think the more growth we will see, and we will see growth, hopefully this will not disintegrate a bit.
Yeah. So you're bullish on ETA for Europe over the next decade then? You see it growing and continuing? Because we're lagging behind the Americans. If you like look through the lens at America, at the ETA market today, okay, it's got different stimulus and different catalysts, but ultimately, you know, deal multiples have gone up. But they've got lots and lots of deals being done. Are we on a similar trajectory here, or is it going to take a slightly sort of different curve?
I mean, we're growing fast now. The last 3 years, we're growing faster than the Americans are. So in that regard, we're catching up. Of course, the base is still quite small, but I think we're catching up. I'm very optimistic about ETA outside America in general. America as well, outside America in general.
Greenbase have done any deals outside of Europe?
Yeah. We've done, we have deals, no, but searchers, yes. Searchers, yes. Okay. Deals, not yet.
So where Ambit's gone, for example, with like...
Ambit are the pioneers in that regard. We don't do necessarily new countries. So we do, for example, Brazil, yeah. But we're not the first at all. We do, we did Japan, but again, not the first. You know what I mean? So we go outside.
In Eastern Europe stuff?
In Poland, we did two.
Great
actually,
for search.
It's really good. So we are pushing outside, but we're still... in the countries which already have been proven, already are doing well. For example, Germany, we came late to Germany. Germany now is doing really good, and we have three companies in Germany. So, but we're not for sure like Ambit, the forerunners. God bless these guys.
They are definitely forerunners, and their risk appetite and their investors' risk appetite is recommendable, actually.
100%. But they're doing great.
Yeah. So are you seeing any particular trends emerging in this space? Are you seeing, you know, one model wheeling out over another? Are you seeing any... evolution of the trad search kind of like deal terms or
a lot of there's a bunch of trends. I mean, for starters, the demographics of the searchers is becoming much more diverse. So it's becoming in terms of MBA versus no MBA, in terms of backgrounds, in terms of...
I thought I meant like the way over indexing on males.
So males, it's luckily now we have, last study was saying 7% female, and you might say that's too small. However, we're coming from
more than get money in VC land, isn't it?
And we're come. I mean, look at the event like today. The event has a good portion of female searchers. This is very rare. Like 4 years ago, you would not have one female searcher in these events. We come up from 2 to 3%. 8 years ago, it was 2 to 3% female. To grow from 2 to 3 in such a growing market to 7 and 8, this means that females are really, you know, coming in. So I think that's one trend which we'll see more of. Another trend is deals are becoming bigger. So you see a bit of more size. And a bit of also different deal structures, not the typical. You have what else? A lot of things.
So we've got deal size, we've got demographics changing, we've got any particular countries emerging at pace versus others that, I mean, Joe, yeah, I mentioned earlier, Liechtenstein there has now got, you know, a huge focus of attention from acquirers.
That's actually very interesting. I think the countries have a few phases. So they start off, people are very excited. So for instance, let's take Germany and then we can go to France. Germany, it started early and people were excited and things happened there. And then there was a long time where searchers poured in, and then searchers were not able to close deals for a time. And this scared investors away. These days, they are closing deals. And I think it's because you there is a point when you crack the code. And I think in Germany, this realization that you need people who are a bit more senior, with a bit more experience, engineers would be great, and that because the founders there would not sell the company to anyone.
No.
They're more selective.
There's a lot of pride in the German Mittelstand. You know, they want to make sure that the businesses go to a good home. You know, we talk a lot about kind of concern about the legacy and actually that plays out in I don't want just an investment buyer to buy my business. I want somebody that, you know, I can trust, understands my business.
100%.
I see that a lot in Germany.
And then also Germany accelerators helped it a lot. So there's like two or three accelerators who are doing a great job. Yeah. So that's one market. You look at France. When we, our first French investment was in maybe the searcher number 4 or 5. So it's very early on. This was just 4 years ago. Now, this year, there's maybe 15 searchers who at least, I don't know how many were raised, but they're trying to raise. So
do you see that being galvanized by the new non-recourse or the loan structure that's coming for SMB succession? I mean, that it's not the SBA equivalent, but it's France's version. And it looks like it's specifically aimed at this. This problem would, let's have some public funding to help businesses transition to a new generation of ownership.
I think it's pushing, especially in the self-funded in France. I think self-funded in France already has been growing and will grow more. But I think for traditional, it was already on this trajectory and it was expected even without this this loan. So yeah, the loan will help, but I think it's France's already. But however, now people are not sure exactly if France is as exciting as they thought it was a few years ago. I still think it is, but we still need to figure out how to close deals and good deals. And you see that the pipeline in France is not as healthy as, for example, the pipeline in Spain. Spain, it was figured out, it's working really well. So although Spain is a smaller economy than France and with much more searchers, but you find really good deals, many people are closing. Really good deal. So, you know what I mean? So there is a...
It's more established in Spain though, right? You know, so it's taught and... But in France, you know, okay, INSEAD's been teaching it for ages, but it hasn't really permeated the sort of general zeitgeist of the...
No, but that's interesting because usually people thought that the more searches you'd have, the less likely it is to find a company. But what you're saying now, and I agree, is that actually markets like Spain and the UK, which everyone was worried when I started, people are like, stay away from the UK. There's no deals. Yeah, in the beginning, for traditional, there's more of, there's not too many investors, stay away of it. Now I'm seeing really good deals of the UK. UK is flying, and UK is a great place to invest.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Spain is the avatar for us. It's the model that we should follow because, you know, it's permeated the business schools, it's permeated the family offices, it's become institutionally mature, and it's cultivated a huge vintage of new searchers. And the deals are being done, and, you know, some returns are being seen. So for us, like, looking at it as, you know, well, hang on, the US innovated it. The UK should have been next, you know, Anglo kind of, you know, right to it. But no, we're asleep. The Spanish market was like, took it and brought it to Europe and was like, this is how it should be done. Okay, Simon Webster aside, but like, you guys are really industrializing.
Yeah, yeah.
We could learn a lesson.
Spain was very lucky with a bunch of investors who started early. Mark Bartomeus was really good at getting these guys in and they're still doing a great job. So Spain is very lucky for these investors. And of course, having ASA and Stanford and ASA having the... So I agree. Spain did great. The UK, if you look at the self-funded part, is doing way better than Spain.
Yeah.
So Spain, for traditional search funds...
It's a funding availability problem. It's a willingness to back traditional...
And this brings us back to the thing that each market has its own difference. I mean, you have... For example, one thing I for me is amazing, that it's easier to leverage in Spain than in the UK. It was from Israel.
Really? I mean, we get scalped here on the cost of capitals. It's, yeah.
So
unfortunately, your regulators do a better job than ours. But that's another story for another day. But yeah, cost of getting access to, since the GFC, it's getting access to commercial finance at a competitive rate is problematic here.
And I mean, here you would do 50-50. In Spain, we see 60. We see, you know what I mean? And we did one in Germany with 80%. You know what I mean? So I always thought that London is the finance hub, but yeah, apparently not for SMEs.
It was really bullish. And since the GFC, it's become scared of its own shadow or has learned how to use that for its own advantage. You know, as, oh, compliance. So we have to charge you 12.5%. So what? Anyway, you're going to get me on my own. So let's read forward. Let's maybe look 3 years down the line. What do you hope Moonbase looks like, and what do you hope the results are saying at that point?
One thing which is on my mind these days, where Moonbase should move, is really not be strictly traditional search funds and go more towards other models. So, for example, self-funded is something where I want to look into more, and I want to have a unit that works with that. One other thing is single sponsor. I think single sponsor can be very interesting for investors like us because, yeah, you do, it's a different type of job, but also it helps you deploy more. And it also covers one problem of search funds, which is that there's no owner. There's a lot of small investors, which is working, and it will continue working. But maybe if you have one owner, the same way the private equity would have, maybe then in this case you would see different, more, let's say more aggressive movements, and you know,
I think it would be more,
you'd fire strategic, faster
strategic input.
It's working really well now, but also that's another thing with the trend of growth that I'm worried about, because already today, having the right board is a challenge.
I do worry that the funds that are participating are spreading themselves. Like from the board representation perspective, like that's a challenge. I completely agree with you. I mean, must be difficult with 45, well, let's say 20, you know, done deals, and you may want to take a board observer or board director position on all of them. How the hell do you get around all that?
No, and boards are a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. Like I didn't expect that. It's a lot of work, especially if the company is not doing well. If it's doing well, it's fine. But if it's not doing well, it's really, really hard. And I agree with you. And it's not paid, because also on the other hand is if
although there are some funds strategy manager fee.
But it's like, I mean, in Spain, the fee is around 10,000 euros a year, which if you
compare a lot.
No, if you compare with other funds, I mean, people like us, we don't care about it that much. So we still do it because we're not doing it for the money. But still, if this was better paid, you'd be able to get people to give it more time. And you can also ask them to do more.
You can also afford to recruit real specialists to go and do that investment management piece,
yes.
Which is what VC does well, is it, you know, you've got your investor relations and your IC and all that sort of stuff post-deal, pre-deal. But then you've got your investment management that are there, you know, checking the metrics on the companies, attending the board meetings, formulating the strategy. And so I think we could do well to mature a bit more in that
area.
Great. One nugget that you'd like for an aspiring acquisition entrepreneur to take away, either about the space and where you see it going, or about Moonbase specifically and how it can help?
No, I mean, I don't want to focus on Moonbase. I think the thing that many don't or forget, I'd say, is the entrepreneurship piece in this journey, because entrepreneurship by
the job.
That is a job, and it's challenging, because there is the ups and downs. There is the fact that you need to be very open to other things, and then the fact that you cannot assume which sector is really, unless you're an expert somewhere, but in general, you need to be very open. And this, let me be very open and very entrepreneurial in my approach and try different things and see this works, it doesn't work, I'll try a new one. I think I would recommend people to search to do more of that, because it's very easy to get into the train and think, okay, I'm going to do exactly like everyone else, but it doesn't work.
Well, I think as the investors can get more picky about the, they're going to have a more abundant choice of searchers to back. The searchers that are proven operators, the searchers that are, you know, able to demonstrate the entrepreneurial ability to add value and create value in the businesses that they acquire, they're the ones to whom the money will gravitate. So I think that's a very wise words. Ibrahim, I'm mindful that you have to prepare for your keynote that you're kindly giving us, and I'm really, really appreciative of the time you've given up for this interview today. But if there's any call to action you'd like for, you know, listeners, maybe in terms of how to reach you or what you'd like to receive from them or not?
No, I mean, LinkedIn is a great way to connect. We are always very, as you know,
yep, very active.
Maybe too active on LinkedIn, so that's it. And I think this is a great space. And I really believe in the next 10 years, this thing will be a huge asset. So everyone who's in it these days should be very proud, because we're building together something which is great. And we will have our differences, we'll have our different ways of doing it. But at the end of the day, this beast will hopefully challenge the VC world.
It's more of a social impact to it as well, I think, you know, the societal impact.
100%, 100%.
Did things at a good, an exciting time in the sort of emerging nascent space.
And it's much needed in the countries we're talking about. It's much needed. So let's see how it goes.
Well done, Ibrahim.
Thank you, Gareth, so much.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye for now. And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed that great interview with Ibrahim Abdulrahim. Moonbase Capital are very much worth you checking out if you haven't already. Go to moonbasecapital.com. We'll have another interview along for you in our next episode. But until then, keep on crunching. Bye for now.